67. So verse 37. Akarnyatma jamayantam samparitya yathagacham rajana shadhibhatram abhadrasya kuto mama. When King Uttanapad heard that his son Dhruva was coming back home, as if coming back to life after death, he could not put his faith in this message, for he was doubtful of how it could happen. He considered himself the most wretched, and therefore he thought that it was not possible for him to attain such good fortune. Dhruva Maharaj is lamenting. What was Dhruva Maharaj's lamentation? What was he regretting or lamenting about? Yes, Madam Gopa.
He asked for a handful of rice.
Yes. He asked for a handful of rice from a great emperor. Yes. What else was he lamenting? So many things. Yes. Yes, he was trying to give medicine to a dead body. That's how Narada's instructions were to him. It didn't work. It was like giving medicine to a dead body, trying to revive a dead body. So basically, he was lamenting his separatist vision. And this is a symptom of devotional service in the modes of passion and ignorance, the separatist vision. He said, it's not easy to achieve the Lord, but because I was thinking differently, pritak mati, I fell down from my position. Because of anatmyam, bodily consciousness, I was mandabhagyasa, very unfortunate. I could have had liberation, bhavachidam, from the Lord. Instead, I asked for antavat, perishable things. Perhaps, he thought, the envious demigods have conspired to pollute my intelligence. And certainly, I was in maya, I was illusioned by duality, binodrik, having separated vision. Instead of mukti, I asked for birth and death again. What a stupid thing. So the Lord offered me his service, but instead I asked for name, fame, wealth, adoration. Such is my misfortune. So yesterday we discussed at length the lamentation of Dhruva and why the Lord gave him the kingdom, even though he didn't want the kingdom, still the Lord gave it to him. So Srila Prabhupada explained that this lamentation is good for advancement in spiritual life. When we realize how we wasted our time trying to enjoy these things, we regret we ever asked the Lord for these things in the first place. And the solution is one thing. At the end of, I think, the last verse, Dhruva didn't say it, Srila Prabhupada explained it. Perhaps Dhruva did also. Let's see what's in verse 36. Yes, it wasn't Dhruva, it was Maitreya. He was glorifying Vidura. And he was giving us the thing that we need. What do we need, actually, to be satisfied in devotional service so that we don't ask for these things? What is that? Okay, attached to pure devotees. What's the thing that the voice, yes. The honey from the lotus feet of the Lord. The honey from the lotus feet of the Lord is the glories of the Lord spoken by the pure devotees. So Maitreya is glorifying Vidura that you have this taste. You're attached to this honey. So you're always satisfied. And you never ask the Lord for material prosperity like Dhruva Maharaj. But still, even though it wasn't good for him to ask for these things, if you have to ask for these things, it's better to go to Krishna. So these were the conclusions that we reached yesterday. So now Dhruva Maharaj is going back home. So we will see what kind of reception. First of all, his father couldn't believe that this was the truth, because just think, a 5-year-old boy alone in the forest, all the tigers and the lions. So he's thinking, this is not possible. So what Prabhupada said, Dhruva Maharaj, a 5-year-old boy, went to the forest for penance and austerity, and the king could not at all believe that a small boy of such tender age could live in the forest. He was certain that Dhruva was dead. He therefore could not fix his faith in the message that Dhruva Maharaj was coming back home again. For him, this message said that a dead man was coming back home, and so he could not believe it. After Dhruva Maharaj's departure from home, King Uttanapad thought that he was the cause of Dhruva's leaving. And he was, actually. He was right. he was the cause, partially. Dhruva's leaving. Thus he considered himself the most wretched. Therefore, even though it was possible that his lost son was coming back from the kingdom of death, he thought that since he was most sinful, it was not possible for him to be so fortunate as to get back his lost son. So these emotions, just imagine a father or mother, they lost their child, and they don't know where the child is. He's 5 years old, and he's alone. And you just go crazy, you go mad. One time I remember my son was lost at the age of 3, somewhere in some village. He took off on his bicycle, and I was just like crazy looking for him. Another time he got in the, we were swimming in the ocean in Goa, and there's big waves. Usually I was holding on to him, but one time I didn't, and so the wave just took him under the water, and I thought, oh boy. And I was just mad looking for him under the water of the ocean, and then finally he came up. He had his little raft, little thing, and he was holding on the raft with one hand and kicking with the other, and the wave washed him to shore. So these kind of moments make you understand what Dhruva's father was feeling, that actually he's brought back from the dead. He should have been dead, but actually he's back. And so then he's feeling so appreciative, so happy that his son is coming back from the dead. Verse 38. Although he could not believe the words of the messenger, he had full faith in the word of the great sage Narada. So remember that Narada Muni came to him and said, don't worry, your son is well taken care of, and he's very famous all over the world. His fame has spread, and he will come back very soon. Thus he was greatly overwhelmed by the news, and he immediately offered the messenger a highly valuable necklace in great satisfaction. So we see in the old times that it's very good to be the messenger of good news, because you get rewarded. And if you're the messenger of bad news, sometimes you lose your head. Yes, cut off his head. So messenger's job was very risky in those days. But it's also very good to be a messenger. Rukmini also, when the messenger came, the brahmana came and said, Lord Krishna has arrived. And she took off her necklace and gave it to the messenger. So the messenger, he believed the messenger because he had faith in Narada. So, verses 39 to 40. Then King Uttanapad, being very eager to see the face of his lost son, mounted a chariot drawn by excellent horses and bedecked with golden filigree, taking with him many learned Brahmins, all the elderly personalities of his family, his officers, his ministers, and his immediate friends. He immediately left the city. As he proceeded in this parade, there were auspicious sounds of conch shells, kettle drums, flutes, and the chanting of Vedic mantras to indicate all good fortune. So this is the party to receive Dhruva Maharaj for coming home. When Prabhupada was here, then we used to have kirtan party to receive Srila Prabhupada, even at the airports. We were very famous at all the airports all over America. Whenever Prabhupada would come to an airport, then we'd have a huge party. One time in Atlanta, I was in Atlanta, that was the first time I saw Srila Prabhupada. They dragged this huge Vyasasan all the way to the arrival lounge. Huge, it took maybe 4 or 5 men to carry it. Big, huge blue velvet Vyasasan, and put it down in the arrival place. So anyway, this was our greeting of, and we would throw flowers all over the place, and sometimes the airport people would get so angry, you know, you have to clean up the flowers. Yeah, but this was, we were receiving the pure devotee of the Lord. And so Dhruva Maharaj was also received. And we were chanting Hare Krishna Mantra in ecstasy. So Dhruva Maharaj was also received in this way. Now here's the comment that Madan Gopal brought up from Burijan yesterday, and I also wrote it down here at this point, that one of the things we should learn is that we're afraid to take shelter of Krishna because we think he's going to take everything away from us. But one thing we should learn, that Dhruva, he got everything. He took shelter of Krishna and he got everything he wanted. So it's not always true that Krishna will take everything. That's only for the advanced devotees. For those who aren't so advanced, then Krishna will fulfill your desires. So that fear should be erased, Brijan Prabhu says. Verse 41. Both the queens of King Uttanapad, namely Suniti and Suruchi, along with his other son Uttama, appeared in the procession. The queens were seated on a palanquin. So Prabhupada talks about the Vaishnava qualities of Suniti. Even though Suruchi was so mean to her, she didn't hesitate to take her up on the palanquin with her to greet Juva Maharaj. That actually now the tide has turned, and Suruchi is in the doghouse, and Suniti is actually the one who's being glorified because her son did such wonderful things. So this is the effect of time. One day you're very favorite of the king, and the next day you're finished, and the other one's the favorite. So these things happen. One day you have a very high position, the next day it's all taken away. Just like recently in the Prime Minister of India changed. So now all the top people, they've lost their position, and now new people are there. So this is the effect of time. Verse 42-43. Upon seeing Dhruva Maharaj approaching the neighboring small forest, King Uttanapad, with great haste, got down from his chariot. He had been very anxious for a long time to see his son Dhruva, and therefore with great love and affection, he went forward to embrace his long-lost boy. Breathing very heavily, the king embraced him with both arms. But Dhruva Maharaj was not the same as before. He was completely sanctified by spiritual advancement due to having been touched by the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here Prabhupada says, it's not this purpose, the next purport. But you can also remember that sometimes we go back and visit our parents after we've become devotees. And we visit our family. There was one brahmachari, and he was going to go visit his mother and sister, but he had been a brahmachari for like over 30 years. And so he asked the women, "What should I do? You know, what if they want to embrace me or something? And I'm a brahmachari, you know." So it's, you know, he's not the same as he was before. So when we go back to visit our families, it's not the same. We're not the same child as when our mother saw us, the mother and father saw us before. They can't even. It's funny. I heard one sannyasi who was a guru. He was saying he went back to his mother, and the disciples were also there visiting, and the disciples were all offering obeisances and all that. And the mother was chastising him, and she said, "I don't have the same relationship as you do with him. I can chastise him." So anyway, it's quite interesting. Verse 44. Reunion with Dhruva Maharaj fulfilled King Uttanapad's long-cherished desire. And for this reason, he smelled Dhruva's head again and again and bathed him with torrents of very cold tears. So what's the significance of the cold tears? Happiness, yes. Cold tears means happiness, and hot tears means distress, according to this. So if you can't tell what you're feeling, you can tell by the temperature of your tears. Verse 45. Then Dhruva Maharaj, the foremost of all nobles, first of all offered his obeisances at the feet of his father and was honored by his father with various questions. He then bowed his head at the feet of his two mothers. So in the middle of the purport, Prabhupada explains the change of heart of Dhruva Maharaj and also of us, hopefully, after we've become devotees for some time. Feelings of insult or honor in this material world are never perceived by a devotee. Lord Chaitanya therefore says that one has to be humbler than the grass, and he recommends more tolerant than the tree to execute devotional service. So that's Chananapi Sunichena Charipa Sahishana Amanina Manadena Kitanya Sadahari. Dhruva Maharaj, therefore, has in this verse been described as Sajanagrani, the foremost of noblemen. Pure devotee is the noblest of all, and he has no feelings of animosity towards anyone. Duality, due to animosity, is a creation of this material world. There is no such thing in the spiritual world, which is the absolute reality. So this is the proof that Dhruva Maharaj has changed. Because before, he wanted revenge against Suruchi, and now he's offering obeisances to her. Big change. Big change. So we can see by the behavior of Yuga Maharaj how he has changed his heart. And Suruchi also got a change of heart when she saw him. Verse 46, Suruchi, the younger mother of Yuga Maharaj, seeing that the innocent boy had fallen at her feet, immediately picked him up, embracing him with her hands, and with tears of feeling, she blessed him with the words, "My dear boy, long may you live." Verse 47, unto one who has transcendental qualities, due to friendly behavior with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all living entities offer honor, just as water automatically flows down by nature. So there's one verse in Bhagavad Gita which explains how a devotee is dear to everyone. Does anybody recall that verse? And why is he dear to everyone? Chapter? Oh yeah, that's every verse almost. He's dear to the Lord, actually. In that chapter? Adveshta Sarvabhutanam. Uh-huh. I was thinking more of chapter 5 also. There's a verse 5, 7th verse of chapter 7. As yoga yukto vishuddhatma vichitatma jitendriya sarva bhutatma bhutatma kurvanapi nalipyate. More of the purport. But Prabhupada, the verse says, one who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains, why is the devotee dear to everyone? It's a very interesting reason why. As the purport of Gita 5.7. The Lord inspires him? That was another reason. He's because he's servant to everyone. And everyone likes a servant, right? We're in this material world because we want servants. We don't want to be a servant. Prabhupada says, because one who works in Krishna consciousness is servant to all, he is very dear to everyone. So Prabhupada, one time he was challenged in a lecture. He was speaking about the four classes of men, first class, second class, third class. So somebody in the audience challenged him that, so you must think you're first class, don't you? Prabhupada said, no, I'm fifth class because I'm serving the fourth class men. So this was the actual mentality of a devotee. He thinks, I am servant of everyone. In the purport, Prabhupada says in the middle, devotee of the Lord does not demand respect from anyone, but wherever he goes, he is honored by everyone throughout the whole world with all respect. Srinivas Acharya said that the six Goswamis of Vrindavan are respected throughout the entire universe because a devotee, having pleased the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of all emanations, automatically pleases everyone, and thus everyone offers him respect. So I'll just recite that verse about the six Goswamis. Krishna Kirtana Gana Natana Para Preman Mitam Paniti Tira Tira Jala Priya Priyakara Nirmasara Puchita Sichetanya Kipa Para Pavipapa Para Vapantaraka Vande Rupasana Janara Priyaka Sri Jiva Gopalaka. So this is the translation. They are just like the ocean of love of God, popular both with the gentle and with the ruffians, because they are not envious of anyone. So that's the dhira dhira janapriyo. This is the part of that verse that Prabhupada would always quote, dhira dhira janapriyo. They are popular both with the gentle and the ruffians. And this is why when Lord Krishna was in Vrindavan, Lord Krishna wasn't pleasing to everyone. So therefore Prabhupada says the six Goswamis are even greater than Lord Krishna because they were pleasing to everyone when they were in Vrindavan. And Prabhupada says that a preacher has to be like this. And he gave the example of Sanatana Goswami. Even though he was not interested in people who are not devotees, he was very sympathetic with the common people. It's not like he was aloof from everyone. The six Goswamis were not aloof from the whole world. Prabhupada gives the example that sometimes a husband and wife would have a fight, And they would go to Sanatana Goswami to settle their dispute. And whatever Sanatana Goswami would say, they would accept. So that's the relationship that these six Goswamis had with the common people, that they were always very sympathetic. So Srila Prabhupada, of course, he's the perfect example of how he was respected by everyone. I just have a short description here from Prabhupada Lilamrita, when Srila Prabhupada was living on the Bowery in New York City. It is written, despite the bad neighborhood where Prabhupada lived and walked, he was rarely disturbed. Has anybody ever been there to that place? Have you seen it? Yeah, what's it like? Just like the bums are lying down there. They're lying everywhere and stumbling around and stinky, smelly and dirty. Garbage everywhere. Prabhupada lived there. Can you believe it? Often he would find several Bowery bums asleep or unconscious at his door, and he would have to step over them. Sometimes a drunk, simply out of his inability to maneuver, would bump into him, or a derelict would mutter something unintelligible or laugh at him. The more sober ones would stand and gesture courteously, ushering the Swami into or out of his door at 94 Bowery. He would pass among them, acknowledging their good manners, as they cleared his path. So there was one devotee was preaching in New York, and this one very poor man came up to him, and he was remembering Prabhupada on the Bowery, and he was appreciating how Prabhupada, I think he must have been one of the bums from the Bowery, and he said, I remember your Guru Maharaj when he was on the Bowery. And he was saying, so he was a great saint. He said, but anyway, Jesus was born in a barn, so what do you expect? So he was saying, Prabhupada is just like that. That even though it was such a terrible place, still he was a saintly person, and he was appreciating how he was untouched by that place. So I have one more, yeah.
Actually, for us, this is a wonderful place to go on pilgrimage.
Okay, so she's suggesting that we go on pilgrimage to the Bowery in New York City.
It's absolutely amazing, Prabhupada's presence there.
Yes.
And that when we walk around that area, and I was there, I just, the Lilamrita was all coming in my mind, and I could see just Prabhupada walking in the streets there. And to see those bums, now, I could understand how Srila Prabhupada had so much compassion in that place. To see the degradation coming in everywhere. This is what you see in Bali. You can see the degradation of the modern society, what it becomes.
Right.
People who are dressed, they are dressed like, not like a beggar in Africa or somewhere. They are dressed with pants and shirt and like, they look like an American person, like a modern person. But I remember that you look in their eyes and there's nothing.
Just a shell of a body.
There's nothing in their hearts. They are burned by drugs and alcohol.
And so this is the... So this, and even these bums were giving respect to Srila Prabhupada. This is the point, that how the respect flows naturally. Does somebody have something over here? Yeah. Yes, yes. So in one sense he's dear to everyone, but in one sense he's not. That's a fact. And Prabhupada, I think he brought up that point right in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna, you know, wasn't he being offensive to the people he killed? The devotee is not supposed to be offensive. He's supposed to be humble to everyone. So wasn't he being offensive to these people, killing these people? Of course, if you see it from a higher sense, you know that his arrows purified them so they could get Krishna Prema and go get their sarup at the end of their lives. But of course, most people won't see like that. They don't see that what's behind it. Madhavan Puri. He remains?
Angerless.
Even though he met... 552. Okay. Vimanyava. Yeah, Prabhupada in this purport also is Trinadapi Sunichena. I'll just read one more example of how everyone loves Srila Prabhupada. This is by Giriraj Swami. It's a remembrance. Prabhupada was on a morning walk with many different types of devotees in Juhu. And Srup Damodar was there, and he was discussing scientific things. And Giriraj Swami's mother and father, by chance, had also come on that morning walk. And so Srila Prabhupada said to Giriraj Maharaj's mother, who was about 60 years old, "Oh, Mrs. Teton, you look so young." So Prabhupada had a way with people. And then at the end of the walk, they came to the parked cars. Well, maybe this must have been actually in the West. In Jihu, they didn't go by car. So at the time, Srila Prabhupada had a Rolls Royce car. And Giriraj's father was looking at the car, kind of like, okay, what kind of guru is... And so Prabhupada very shyly and humbly looked down at the ground and said to Giriraj Maharaj's father, "My disciples have gotten this for me." And then the father immediately said, "Oh, no, no, you deserve it, you deserve it." And then Prabhupada said, "You can come with me, you can ride with me in the car." And the father said, "No, no, you go with your other disciples." So then afterwards, Hari Sari, who was with Srila Prabhupada, said to Srila Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, everyone loves you so much." Srila Prabhupada said, "Yes, because I love everyone." So that's how it works. That's why everyone loves a pure devotee, because Prabhupada actually loved everyone. So this is the same thing that we're experiencing here in Srimad Bhagavatam, that there was so much problem before Dhruva left the palace. There was a big problem in relationship with his stepmother. But now it's completely changed. The big change. So if we have a problem with relationships, we can just study the life of Dhruva Maharaj and see how to make it so that everyone loves us. If we love everyone, everyone will love us. So verse 48. The two brothers, Uttama and Dhruva Maharaj, also exchanged their tears. They were overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love and affection. And when they embraced one another, the hair on their bodies stood up. 49. Suniti, the real mother of Dhruva Maharaj, embraced the tender body of her son, who was dearer to her than her own life, and thus forgot all material grief, for she was very pleased. 50. My dear Vidura, Suniti was the mother of a great hero. Her tears, together with the milk flowing from her breasts, wet the whole body of Dhruva Maharaj. This was a great auspicious sign. So what is the meaning of this milk and tears at the same time? What is the auspicious Madhavan Puri? Abhishek. It's an Abhishek. Natural Abhishek was happening by the mother of Dhruva. Prabhupada says, when deities are installed, they are washed with milk, yogurt, and water. And this ceremony is called Abhishek. In this verse, it has been especially mentioned, the tears which flowed down from the eyes of Suniti were all auspicious. This auspiciousness of the Abhishek ceremony performed by his beloved mother was an indication that in the very near future, Dhruva Maharaj would be installed on the throne of his father. So then later on in the purport, Prabhupada describes Dhruva, of course in the Sanskrit, Virasu, that he is a great hero. So why is Dhruva a great hero? What did he do? 5 years old. Why is he considered a great hero? Yes. Because he saw the Supreme... What battle did he win? Yes. Yes, he conquered over Maya. If you can conquer over Maya, you're a great hero. Not if you can kill so many people. But actually, if you can conquer over Maya, that's something. So he conquered. That's what Prabhupada says. He was not only a heroic emperor of this planet, but also a great devotee. A devotee is also a great hero because he conquers the influence of Maya. When Lord Chaitanya inquired from Ramananda Roy about the most famous man in this world, the latter replied that anyone who is known as a great devotee of the Lord is to be accepted as the most famous. 51. Residents of the palace praise the queen. "Dear queen, your beloved son was lost a long time ago, and it is your great fortune that he has now come back. It appears, therefore, that your son will be able to protect you for a very long time and will put an end to all your material pangs." So before she was completely neglected. Her position was she was completely neglected by the king, unprotected, completely alone, and now the opposite. She has a son who is a great hero. 52. "Dear queen, you must have worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who delivers his devotees from the greatest danger. Persons who constantly meditate upon him surpass the course of birth and death. This perfection is very difficult to achieve. So Prabhupada explains in purport that when Dhruva Maharaj was absent, not only did he perform severe austerities, his mother at home was praying to the Lord at the same time meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada says, the Lord was worshipped by both mother and son, and both were able to achieve the supreme benediction from the Supreme Lord. Sudarjayam indicates no one can conquer death. When Dhruva Maharaj was away from home, his father thought he was dead. Ordinarily, a king's son only 5 years old and away from home in the forest would certainly be supposed dead. But by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not only was he saved, but he was blessed with the highest perfection. So my question to you is this. How can we conquer death? And if you can say it in Sanskrit, that's nice. If you have any verses to explain, Madhavan Puri. 4:9. Janma karma chamedivyam. Evam yo vitatvata. Yes, punar janma, no more punar janma. Anybody else? Adi Purush. Which one is that? 1326. Oh, simply by hearing. Okay, so that's our process. The verse before said some people, they realize the Lord by karma, some by gyan yoga, some by yoga, ashtanga yoga. But those who cannot follow any path, for them, what do? Simply by hearing. They can conquer. There's another verse that says that in Bhagavatam. Simply by hearing. You can conquer over Shotavya Kirtitavyasha Cheshtabhayam. Okay? That's good. Which verse? Yeah, that's what I'm asking you. Oh, his the one he said? 215. 2:11, okay? Yes. Also, Lord Brahma, stane stita shutikatam tanuvam anobhir. Stay in your position, simply hear about Krishna, and you will conquer the unconquerable. So these are the verses. There's a really nice verse in 1st Canto, 16th chapter, verse 7. That also says here the same thing. Shudrayusham ninamanga martyanam ritamichitam iho pahuto bhagavam mityusam mitakarmani osutagoshami. There are those, this is Shonaka speaking, there are those amongst men who desire freedom from death and get eternal life. They escape the slaughtering process by calling the controller of death, Yamaraj. So then how do they escape? Prabhupada says in the purport, the only hope of suspending the cruel slaughtering process of Yamaraj is to call him to hear and chant holy name of the Lord. Yamaraj is a great devotee of the Lord. He likes to be invited to kirtans and sacrifices by the pure devotees. So, of course, at the beginning of our course in the first year, we invited Yamaraj to our Bhagavat, and we hope he's still coming so that everybody here will be free from death, at least while they're here hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And yes? Question. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, why not?
Srila Prabhupada mentioned somewhere that in Germany the mothers of so many soldiers pray for their sons to husbands in the war.
Right, in Germany.
Yeah.
They prayed to the Lord.
And they did not return.
Right. So they lost their faith. Yes, isn't that amazing? She didn't go to the forest to perform any austerities, but she gets the same perfection. Is that fair? Yes.
Yeah,
how is it that the mother didn't go and do all the austerities, but she got the same result as Dhruva Maharaj? That's your question? In contrast to the other persons who prayed from mothers from Germany who prayed for their sons to come back.
Hare Krishna.
And they didn't get any benefit. Well, of course, the praying. Yeah.
Those mothers were demanding from her.
Okay, good.
Sumiti was imploring.
Okay, they were demanding. You bring my son back, or else I don't believe in you anymore. But Suniti had a different mood, actually. Quite different mood. But she was praying in great submission and humility and not demanding. But she was praying for her son also. So then in the 16th chapter of First Canto, also the conclusion of Shonaka Rishi was Aho niloke pieta hari lilamritam vacham. That just drink hari lilamrita, and that will protect you from death. There is another verse you learn in Second Canto. That's 1:16:8. Yeah. Ayuharati vaipunsam jnana stanchyana so. Dasyarte yakshanoni cha utama shoka vartaya. By rising and setting, the sun takes away the life of everyone except the devotee who is hearing and chanting glories of the Lord. So that is our hope, that we are hearing and chanting glories of the Lord, and we will become free from death. So there's Bhaktivinoda Thakur also gives the same advice in this. I'll just sing a few verses. Oh yeah, this verse is also there. Payaki kara bhavana keva evena bachile jashara shuta charme pori vilache. You have achieved such a rare human body, but you do not care for this gift. You remain not serving, darling of Yashoda, and slowly fall to your last moments to death. Urita tapana hari leyasta jirgela bali hari bebyasta Chavakana eva yalasha hoina pacha hitaya raji. With every rising and setting of the sun, a day passes and is lost. Why do you remain idle and not serve the Lord of the heart? Krishnanam sudakaryapan jurayabhakati vinarapan navina pichunahiko ara charabhupanamaje. Drink the pure nectar of the holy name. There is nothing but the name to be had in the 14 worlds, and it has filled the soul of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So these are the thoughts of the great acharyas and the great devotees, how to conquer death. So now Dhruva Maharaj has conquered death, he's returned. So let's see how he's received by the citizens. Verse 53, the sage Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, when everyone was thus praising Dhruva Maharaj, the king was very happy, and he had Dhruva and his brother seated on the back of a she-elephant. Thus he returned to his capital, where he was praised by all classes of men. The whole city was decorated with columns of banana trees, containing bunches of fruits and flowers, and betel nut trees with leaves and branches were seen here and there. There were also many gates set up, which were structured to give the appearance of sharks. At each and every gate there were burning lamps and big water pots decorated with differently colored cloth, strings of pearls, flower garlands, and hanging mango leaves. In the capital city there were many palaces, city gates, and surrounding walls, which were already very, very beautiful. And on this occasion, all of them were decorated with golden ornaments. The domes of the city palaces glittered as the domes of the beautiful airplanes which hovered over the city. So whose airplanes are these that we are seeing now that are hovering? Juvas? UFOs. Right. In those days there were no UFOs. Isn't that amazing? Because they knew who the planes were. They weren't UFOs. Everybody knew. KFOs. What does that mean? Known flying objects. Not unknown. Okay, so who were these flying objects? The demigods, right. The demigods were coming in their airplanes. They also came to receive Dhruva Maharaj. It was such a big occasion, the demigods came for it. So the demigods, whenever there's something big happening in the universe, then all the demigods, all the sages come. So here there was a big happening, Dhruva was coming back home. So the demigods came to see it. And Prabhupada says, it is suggested by Srimad Vijayadwaja Tirtha that on this occasion, The demigods from higher planetary systems also came in their airplanes to bestow their blessings on Dhruva Maharaj on his arrival at the capital of his father. It appears all the domes of the city palaces as well as the pinnacles of the airplanes were decorated with ornamental work in gold, and being reflected by the sunshine, they were all glittering. We can observe a specific distinction between Dhruva Maharaj's time and modern days. So Prabhupada is always harping on this point, the difference between Vedic civilization and modern civilization. For the airplanes in those days were made of gold, whereas at the present moment, airplanes are made of base aluminum. This just gives a hint of the opulence of Dhruva Maharaj's days and the poverty of modern days. So just Prabhupada in another place, he was saying how, I think it was Kardama Munis, when he created that huge flying palace, he was comparing the two. At the palace, in the palace, there were nice beds, there were parks, you could go swimming, and compared to the airplanes nowadays. It says, you feel great discomfort on takeoff, on landing, and then you have to sit in the seat for so long. I think before they used to have big balloons that would fly and they had more comfort. But they weren't so safe. So I hear. Where you could sit, yeah. And most of it was the big balloon. Yes. Blimps. Acha. Teplin, yeah. So, yeah, I heard they had beds, though. I mean, I was reading some, I don't remember. But anyway, but modern-day travel is a far cry from this, made of gold. So this is a difference between our civilization and that civilization. And Prabhupada would always say that, and they say that they were aborigines a few thousand years ago. And here we see millions and billions of years ago how opulent, how cultured people were. Verse 57. All the quadrangles, lanes and streets in the city and the raised sitting places at the crossings were thoroughly cleansed and sprinkled with sandalwood water. And auspicious grains such as rice and barley and flowers, fruits and many other auspicious presentations were scattered all over the city. Thus, as Dhruva Maharaj passed on the road from every place in the neighborhood, all the gentle household ladies assembled to see him, and out of maternal affection they offered their blessings, showering him with white mustard seed, barley, curd, water, newly grown grass, fruits, and flowers. So he must have had a lot of abhishekhs on the way home. It's getting everyone was giving him abhishek. In this way, Dhruva Maharaj, while hearing the pleasing song sung by the ladies, entered the palace of his father. So nowadays, I think in modern days, if there's a parade, they throw paper or something, isn't it? Ticker tape. They throw, what is it, streams of paper or like that. So it's quite, my times have changed. Streams. Streamers. They throw papers. So before it was,
Confetti.
Yeah, little confetti, pieces, small shred pieces of paper in parades. So I guess it's kind of a perverted reflection of what used to be thrown in the Vedic times. Before, there was much more opulent, rice and fruits and flowers. And actually, even 30 years ago, 30, how long is it, 1970, 71? It's about 30 years ago when Prabhupada, when the devotees first came to India, I was not there, but my friends told me, when they came to Surat, then the ladies, they had saris across all the lanes. There were big saris to shade them from the sun. And then they had the water pots, and then the people were coming out of the houses, and they were giving so many garlands to the devotees that they were just like up to their face in garlands, and they were doing arti to the devotees and giving them water and sprinkling sandalwood and flowers. So even 30 years ago, such a reception was there for Prabhupada and his devotees in Surat, his disciples. And in some places, Prabhupada would ride on a silver horse-drawn chariot, different places. So these were the opulent receptions in the villages of India. In previous days, there was so much opulence. So verse 60, Dhruva Maharaj thereafter lived in his father's palace, which had walls bedecked with highly valuable jewels. His affectionate father took particular care of him, and he dwelled in that house just as the demigods live in their palaces in the higher planetary systems. The bedding in the palace was as white as the foam of milk and was very soft. The bedsteads were made of ivory with embellishments of gold, and the chairs, benches, and other sitting places and furniture were made of gold. 62. The palace of the king was surrounded by walls made of marble with many engravings made of valuable jewels like sapphires, which depicted beautiful women with shining jewel lamps in their hands. And so Prabhupada, I don't know if it's in this purport, but it is in this purport. Paragraph 4. That previously, there was a paragraph 3. 1, 2. Paragraph 2. Prabhupada said, there were walls like those in the palace of Maharaj Uttanapad even very recently during the Mughal period. Anyone who has seen the Red Fort in Delhi must have marked that the walls were made of marble and once decorated with jewels. During the British period, all these jewels were taken away and dispatched to the British Museum. And that's where they all went to. So paragraph 3. The conception of worldly opulence was formerly based mainly on natural resources such as jewels, marble, silk, ivory, gold, and silver. The advancement of economic development was not based on big motor cars. The advancement of human civilization depends not on industrial enterprises, but on possession of natural wealth and natural food, which is all supplied by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so that we may save time for self-realization and success in the human form of life. So that's really interesting that this whole industrial revolution took place, I don't know how long, a few hundred years ago, a couple hundred, and life completely changed since that. Such a big change in the way people live. So what are the opulences nowadays? If somebody looks at somebody and says, oh, he has a lot of opulence, what do we consider?
We have
running water. Running water. This is Vrindavan. Are you an MVT?
No.
What's that?
I was said yesterday
that
the World Bank.
Yeah. The World Bank said. No more water. Where? All over the world. World Bank said, in 10 years, if everyone remains demons and don't become devotees, there will be no water. Yes. Except Bislary will be there. Yeah, okay. So what are the opulences besides Bhajabihari? A nice computer, yes. Of course, these are today's opulences. If someone has a computer, if you don't have a computer, then you're nowhere, actually, today's world. It's not even a sign of opulence, it's just a status quo, yeah.
Children have mobile phone.
Children have mobile phone. Actually, my daughter plays with one. He has a friend she plays with. Not only does she have a mobile phone, but her Barbie doll has a mobile phone, too. And now her Barbie doll needs a computer too. So this is opulence of modern, yeah. What's that?
Credit cards,
yes, yes. My son wants to fill up his wallet with cards. Credit cards, yeah.
Fashions,
yes.
Name brand.
Name brand, yeah, name brands. It can't just have clothes. It has to have a name on it. It has a very... what do you call the name?
Travel.
Travel is an opulence, yes. So devotees, people can't figure out. People in Oxford, we were living in Oxford, and the devotee was telling me, she says, the guy can't figure out how I have no money to pay the rent, but I'm traveling all over the world. this is typical devotee. You can't pay for your electric bill, but somehow you're traveling here and there and going to America, whatever, whatever. It's like, yeah, but it is, I mean, devotees have opulence, which the outside people, they can't understand the opulence of the devotees. Yeah, even materially speaking. Yeah, so these are the opulences. You have a TV, you have a computer, you have a phone. So a phone is not an opulence. Yeah. A four-wheel drive. Achcha. What's that?
For the wife, it's like in the Western countries now, you see all the ladies in America drive on this four-wheel drive.
Four-wheel drive. Yeah, I haven't been there.
SUVs.
SUVs. Yeah, I haven't been.
Wow,
four-wheel drive. Is that a sign of women's liberation?
They're not like cars. They're like
sports. Really?
Indestructible,
wow. I guess protection. Yeah. Interesting. I should keep up more with what's going on. Anyway, yes, the opulences. And previously it was gold, silver, ivory, jewels, marble. Now we have probably a bunch of paper for money. And we think we are very opulent. So this is the previous opulence, you can't take it away. Something, you have your land, you have your cows, you have your own food. And so if anything happens, you're not bothered. I remember here we were in Vrindavan. It was in the year 1999. And everyone was so worried about that Y2K or something. The world was going to finish or something. I don't know. Anyway, so many things are going to happen. And we weren't preparing in Vrindavan at all because, I mean, at least I wasn't, and I think a lot of people weren't, because like for us every day is Y2K. You know, it's like every day you don't have water, or you don't have...
There's a river nearby.
Well, sort of. Right. There's cow dung. It's a fact, actually. You've got the natural resources here. You got the cow dung to cook on? Which field? You're going
to
steal someone's food. Anyway. Yeah, in the village, right. Right. But in Delhi, I think they might have a problem. Even now, they don't have water. Anyway. Okay. Verse 63. The king's residence was surrounded by gardens wherein there were varieties of trees brought from the heavenly planets. In those trees, there were pairs of sweetly singing birds and almost mad bumblebees, which made a very relishable buzzing sound. So actually, Vrindavan used to be like that. That when I came here in 1972, in the main road, there were peacocks on the main road. Of course, the main road is very quiet. There is no question of anything, any cars, any motorized vehicles at all. And every once in a while, you would see a rickshaw. Bicycle rickshaw. Every once in a while. That was in 1972. And it was all jungle all the way up to Fogal Ashram. It was just trees. Jungle. And Biharlal was there. He had a lemonade stand. Something like lemonade. Yeah, like a little wooden shack. And he was selling lemonade or nimbu pani. Lassi. Yeah. And I remember the rickshaws were 1 rupee, but none of the devotees had a rupee to pay for the rickshaw. So we were always walking everywhere. We had to go from Ramanreti to Damodar temple. Prabhupada was speaking in Damodar, and then we do Harinam every day to Ramanreti and go back. It was quite different. And of course, there was hardly any electricity. And yeah, it was difficult. But then, of course, we could just have bath in the Jamuna when there was no water. We were right on the Jamuna River. Yeah, there were no walls. Yeah, so yeah, the peacocks. Now the peacocks, we still have peacocks where we live, at my house. I feed them every day. So the peacocks have moved back away from the main road. We can still hear the birds in the morning at sunrise. But if you live on the main road in Vrindavan, you don't hear it anymore. It's in front of the temple, you hear loudspeakers and other things. There weren't any loudspeakers. That was the best thing. You could hear the bells from the temples.
That's,
yeah. They didn't have, I don't think they had when 1972. There were no loudspeakers. Maybe in 72 there was nothing. Anyway, this is opulence. So in the Purport Prabhupada says, in this verse, the word Amara Jumai, trees brought from heavenly planets, is very significant. Heavenly planets are known as Amara Loka, the planets where death is very much delayed, because the people there live for 10,000 years, according to calculations of the demigods, in which our 6 months are equal to 1 day. The demigods live in the heavenly planets for months, years, and 10,000s of years, according to demigod time. And then again, after the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they fall down to this earth. These are the statements that can be collected from Vedic literature. As the people there live for 10,000 years, so also do the trees. Of course, here on this earth, there are many trees which live for 10,000 years. Where are those trees? In California? Something, sequoias? Redwoods? Sequoias. The one in Calcutta, yeah. Gujarat. So what to speak of the trees on the heavenly planets? They must live for more than many 10,000 of years. Sometimes it's practiced even now. Some valuable trees are taken from one place to another. But I think that's not allowed because you can't take plants from one country to another, can you, anymore? It's like quarantine. If you go to the airport, they take away your plant or something. So anyway, yes. So here, before, they used to take it from one country to another. Now it's from the heavenly planets and down to the earth. They were transplanting, taking valuable plants. Verse 64. There were emerald staircases which led to lakes full of variously colored lotus flowers and lilies, and swans, karandavas, chakravakas, cranes, and similar other valuable birds were visible in those lakes. The saintly king Uttanapada, hearing of the glorious deeds of Dhruva Maharaj and personally seeing also how influential and great he was, felt very satisfied. For Dhruva's activities were wonderful to the supreme degree. The purport Prabhupada says he must have performed, this is the middle of the purport, he must have performed many wonderful activities by the grace of the Lord. No one is more satisfied than the father of a person who is credited with glorious activities. So not only did he do something wonderful in the forest, he kept on doing wonderful things when he came back. That's what Prabhupada is saying here in this purport. Verse 66. When, after concentration, King Uttanapada saw that Dhruva Maharaj was suitably mature to take charge of the kingdom, and that his ministers were agreeable, and the citizens were also very fond of him, he enthroned Dhruva as emperor of this planet. So this is a very important point about monarchy. That monarchy is not autocratic. That there were three things here in this verse. First, the king examined him. He saw he's mature. Second, his ministers agreed. And third, the citizens liked him. So then he enthroned him. Prabhupada says in the purport, although it is misconceived that formerly the monarchical government was autocratic, from the description of this verse, it appears that not only was King Uttanapada Rajarshi, but before installing his beloved son Dhruva on the throne of the empire of the world, he consulted his ministerial officers, considered the opinion of the public, and also personally examined Dhruva's character. Then the king installed him on the throne to take charge of the affairs of the world. So in my son's history book, he's studying government, history of government, for his study course in America, American study course. So they have in his textbook that there's two sorts of types of government. One is called the divine right theory. They say that according to, you're chosen by God to be the king. So they say this is the divine right theory. By divine right, you become king. And the second one is consent of the governed. So they're opposing. Opposed to the divine right theory is the consent of the governed. It means those who are in, who the people, the common people, they agree that this should be our ruler. So they're making the two opposite in my son's textbook. That either it's you're just appointed as king, or else you're elected by the people, or you're accepted by the people. So what they're saying in my son's textbook is unless you have a democracy election, then it's not the consent of the government, of the governed. Those who are governed, they don't agree. So that's quite interesting. A prophet said this is a misconception. And I see it, right, to how they're teaching the children in the West, at least in America, that monarchy is autocratic, it's not good, and it's completely out of fashion, and it's useless, and it's very bad. They're saying, they're teaching, yes. In England, might be different. Yes, that's the problem. And they give examples of kings in the 17th, 18th centuries who are very bad. Yeah. Yes, that's true. He did say that. But I just found it interesting that still we should understand the principle of the thing, that monarchy is good. Yes, he did say now there should be a devotee president, that the people should elect a Vaishnava as the head of the country. He did say that. This Kali Yuga. So Prabhupada says, when a Vaishnava king like Dhruva Maharaj is the head of the government of the entire world, the world is so happy it is not possible to imagine or describe. Even now, if people would all become Krishna conscious, the democratic government of the present day would be exactly like the kingdom of God, heaven, kingdom of heaven. So yes, here he says that. We could have a kingdom of heaven if everyone voted for a Vaishnava. If all people became Krishna conscious, they would vote for persons of the category of Dhruva Maharaj. If the post of chief executive were occupied by such a Vaishnava, all the problems of satanic government would be solved. The youthful generation of the present day is very enthusiastic, trying to overthrow the government in different parts of the world. But unless people are Krishna conscious like Dhruva Maharaj, there will be no appreciable changes in government, because people who hanker to attain political position by hook or by crook cannot think of the welfare of the people. They're only busy to keep their position of prestige and monetary gain. They have very little time to think of the welfare of the citizens. So I was reading in, I think it was in Australia, one devotee was, during Prabhupada's time, he was running for a position in government. Who was that?
Sabhavati.
Yeah, and somebody brought up in class last year that if he became a president, well, the first thing he would do?
He got interviewed by a reporter.
What would you do if you were elected? Bar
in the parliament.
Yes. So he would get rid of the bar in the parliament where all the members go to drink, all the legislators go to drink. Yeah, how can you run a country when you're intoxicated? So the first thing he would do would close the bar and the legislature. So that's very, very good. Very good. Yeah, so this is Krishna conscious government. So another point is that the monarchy was advised by a group of Brahmins. And the Brahmins who advised the kings were very high Brahmins. If we remember in first canto, Maharaj Yudhisthira, when he got the throne of the world, then he didn't want to take the throne, and he was very upset. And at that time, great sages were advising him. And among those great sages, one was Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva was advising Yudhisthira, no, you should take the throne. And so Prabhupada explained that these great kings, these monarchs, had these Brahmins who were advising, and they would always follow the advice of the Brahmins. So this is the monarchy. 67. After considering his advanced age and deliberating on the welfare of his spiritual self, King Uttanapada detached himself from worldly affairs and entered the forest. So end of purport. Prabhupada again will give us great hope for ourselves who are struggling devotees. In modern days, however, it is not possible to give up one's home and go to the forest to practice austerity. But if people of all ages would take shelter of the Krishna conscious movement and practice the simple austerities of no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating, and chant Hare Krishna mantra regularly 16 rounds, by this practical method, it would be a very easy task to get salvation from this material world. So here's a promise by Srila Prabhupada to us. chant 16 rounds, follow 4 principles, it'll be easy to get liberation. So any questions or comments? Till the end of death. So what your question is, so therefore, does this apply to the temple presidents? When they get to the age of 50, should they leave their management and go?
And he gets much more light than he has so much experience, so much so many people.
Consultant. Often they retire and become consultants. So you're saying that if, by being temple president, he's not putting his energy in spiritual life?
Maybe he's not being introspective enough in the external platform.
What do you say, Vajrabihari Prabhu?
Well, any individual, but generally, yeah, let them be advisors.
Let them be advisors.
The younger people.
Yeah, I would agree.
Management and let the younger people take advice from the older.
Yeah. Let them travel around and give their advice and be available for the younger generation. But let the younger generation manage. Because like now we're old, we have no strength. And no, like we had, and when we were young, we were teenagers, we were managing. Teenagers, 20-year-old. Right. And he never succeeded. He could never stop, he could never retire and translate. He had to manage. His whole life. Yes. Yes, to write the Bhagavad Gita. That was Prabhupada's idea, that he would just wanted to retire, sit and translate, and let all the young people travel and do all the management, especially. He didn't want the headache of management. But he got it. Yeah. So who would agree with Vajrabihari Prabhu that at the age of 50, all the temple 50, but when they get old, they should retire and let the young people. Yeah, it's good. Isn't that just for Brahmins? Kshatriyas don't retire. Kshatriyas retire. They retire. They go to the forest. That's true. But if you're in the position of Kshatriya, then you can behave like a Kshatriya. I mean, if you're in the position of management, that means you're taking up the role of a Kshatriya. Yes?
One thing is that very good system to ensuring that the things will go on
yes.
to the next generation. Because when
yes.
older people stick to their seat like that,
yeah.
then when they leave, there's chaos.
Yes.
Because they haven't trained anybody. And
right.
And training is not only in theory, but training is that someone should start doing things.
Right.
And then they get the experience. While the older ones are still here, they get the experience, they get the guidance, and they
right. So apprenticeship
yeah.
should be there. Not that the guy, okay, I'm leaving, and that's it, and no, yeah. Just fend for yourselves. What's that? Who's Mahalai?
Only
sannyasi should preach. Ooh, not when Prabhupada was here. Oh, when Prabhupada was here, and I'm sure in most places of the world, everyone's a preacher. Doesn't matter who you are, everyone has to preach. Yeah, that's... Another point is that if you just have the old people in charge, then you get out, they can be out of touch with the younger generation. Because times are changing so quickly that there are so many things are happening in the world. If you have a young person in charge, then he can relate much easier to the rest of the congregation and the world and all that. So, and all, like when we were young, we were doing it. Now what are our teenagers doing? Our teenagers and they don't know what to do, actually, basically. They don't know what to do. Because we don't have a place for them so much. Any other comments? Yes, questions? Yes, you. What's that?
Yeah.
A fear that Vaishnavas will be poor.
Just to glorify Krishna, Vaishnava, and Devi would be all willing and
Okay, for the Rajasri sacrifice. Yes. So the Pandavas were praying for opulence, Rajasuya. They were showing that a Vaishnava has all opulence. Actually, they didn't pray for it. They went and got it, Arjuna. He's called Dhananjaya because he went and got all the gold left by King Maruta. Yeah, Kshatriyas don't pray, but so much.
In Mahabharata.
In Mahabharata, yeah.
Yes,
great opulence. Yes, yes. Ambarish. Yeah, even our Ambarish. Yes, exactly. Good name Prabhupada gave him, Ambarish. He's a very good example. And before, like in Calcutta, they were having so much trouble with the government, and he just came one day and announced that he's going to make something, and then all the trouble's finished. And then he announced that he wanted to make a big Disneyland, what, spiritual Disneyland in Calcutta. And yeah, I heard about that. But then he needed so much land they couldn't give it to him. So now I heard it's going to be in Jaipur. Jaipur, at least that's what was up on our bulletin board last few months ago. Yeah, and in Jaipur they offered 400 acres of land, somebody near the government of Rajasthan, to Ambarish to make his spiritual Disneyland. Is that hello or goodbye? Hello. Okay. Any other questions, comments? Thank you for that comment. If not, then we'll stop early today, 20 minutes early. No objection? Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.